Hey, Immigrantly family, I have something very important to share with all of you, so please pay close attention. Belong on Your Own Terms is something I've poured my heart into. It's an app that helps you gently explore who you are, what you've carried, and what you want to claim moving forward. Think of it as a daily space to breathe, reflect, and reconnect with yourself without expectations, labels, or boxes. It's my invitation to you to belong in the most honest way possible on your own terms. So please don't forget to subscribe to the app, download it, give it some love. You can find the link in our show notes, and I can't wait for you to give feedback. So please check it out. Hey everyone, welcome to the Immigrantly Hive. I'm Sadia Khan, a cultural thinker, social entrepreneur, mom, immigrant, and a human discovering new things, unlearning and learning with all of you. Now, this past Monday, I was at the Signal Awards to celebrate great storytellers and also our podcast, Sportly, which, if you guys haven't listened to, is a narrative podcast at the intersection of culture, history, and sports. Now, I took a moment to soak it all in, to relish our incredible team's work. But you know what? That moment didn't last. By the next day, I was back to the hustle, the grind. And what I took away from the event was how little people know about our work, how little visibility we still have for our brand. And while those are legitimate concerns, and I get why I was feeling so demoralized at the end of the week, sometimes I feel as immigrants, we don't give ourselves the permission to relax, to breathe easy, because society has created this caricature of who we should be. Perfect in every sense. Only then we can be worthy of living in this country. So today, I'm leading with a small act of defiance, a quiet protest of sorts, that I'm more than what I do. I hope you, wherever you are, whatever you are doing, are able to let go of all the negative thoughts for just a second. Today's guest, who is a fellow Pakistani-American, a podcaster and a writer whose lens is identity, stories, home, belonging, is with me to talk about these incredible quiet moments of pause, what it means to be worthy of living in this country, and how do we strike that balance between being human and aspiring to be perfect. So without further ado, let's dive right in. How are you doing, Bilal?
I'm doing well. It is a great moment to be a Desi, an immigrant in New York, in America.
And why is that?
We've been through challenging times, let's just put it that way, socially, culturally, politically, over the last few years. And it feels now like with Zoran winning the election as an immigrant in New York City, it feels like a shock of electricity running through the veins of every immigrant in this city, and frankly, the country, because it feels like it's okay to be an immigrant again. It's okay to be successful. It's okay to not have to hide your pehchan or your identity when you're trying to do something in the mainstream, but actually embrace it and win in America on behalf of that, and to see voters come out the way that he sort of mobilized entire communities. I think that's very powerful. And there's one more thing that I'm going to say, which is You know, the fear that at least I had, and I think a lot of us had, was when he would win, there would be like a wave of anti-immigrant and anti-Islamophobia sort of sentiment. And there has been that. But mercifully, because he said in his speech, my winning proves that Islamophobia cannot win elections anymore, like that's no longer a thing. It feels like a watershed moment. And for all of us, I know, Sadia, you've been so passionate about the community, particularly the immigrant community, for so long. It just feels like such a special moment that all of us are here, and there's still a long way to go, but we should take this moment to just take it all in and feel it in our bones.
You know, it's so interesting you started with this conversation, because in my intro, I was talking about how we don't pause and how we don't celebrate little moments of joy and satisfaction. But I will push back a little. Yes, this is a great moment of cautious optimism. I do think, as immigrants, as people from diverse backgrounds, we are putting a lot of pressure on this one person, and he will make mistakes, and he will most likely at some point disappoint his constituents, which I hope doesn't happen often. But I think just seeing him as a human who is learning or unlearning with us and is unapologetically who he is probably where I see this watershed moment. But at the same time, I really, really hope that people are able to extend him some grace, because I have already started seeing people judging him for his decisions or his appointees and appointments. And I'm like, come on, give him a break. So that's one thing, Bilal. But the other thing that you said, which really stood out to me, was we can celebrate our success with his elections. And in my mind, as an immigrant, I feel there's so much pressure to always show our successes, to be in this binary of perfection or absolute villainish caricature of who we can be. So isn't it important that through his win, we learn that we can be humans in all different shades and focus less on success and perfection and focus more on the messiness of who we can be?
I think that's such a beautiful thought. And I agree with both of your thoughts to some level, but I want to challenge you on a few things here as well. I think on the point where you say that it was, we shouldn't over dramatize his win, because what if he fails, or what if he makes mistakes, or what if, you know, something goes wrong on that angle? I would say that more than a win for him, this is a win for America and a win for democracy. Because only in America can somebody like him, who comes from the background that he comes from, you know, for context, New York City 20 years ago was, the victim of sort of 9/11 attacks, and such a dramatic and traumatic moment in our history. And as a country, and then, you know, there was a wave of sort of backlash, Islamophobia, all of that, anti-immigrant sentiment, which resulted in a whole bunch of things. Even culturally, we had to become very sensitive about how immigrant or how Muslim or how Pakistani or how Desi, you know, the code switching, all of that. And I think what makes me happy is not just like his victory in terms of in the personal aspect of it, but the fact that the majority of voters and young people were like, we see you. We see that you're flawed. He didn't run a perfect campaign. He made mistakes already.
And that's what I loved about his campaign, right? Because just to clarify, what I meant was that it's okay for him to fail. It's okay for him to have some missteps, right? We should not put this burden on him to be a perfect human. And that's what scares me, that people have already started doing that, right? Judging him against this long checklist of who he should be instead of who he is. But absolutely, you're right.
I couldn't agree more. And then to your second point about celebrating, but also sort of, you know, mobilizing in that sense, I do feel like the fact that people are already criticizing him and his picks, I feel like we as a community need to give more grace to our community and be more supportive. I know, Sadia, you and I have sort of chatted about this previously as well, when it's so hard to be a leader in our community or to raise your voice, because traditionally our communities have been told to be model minorities in America, like put your head down, do the work.
Exactly.
Just like get everything done. And I think it's a lot also about being and occupying the space that we have and being comfortable in our skin, being comfortable in terms of who we are. And this is why, like, I enjoy sort of podcasts like this. And I'm so inspired by the work that you do, because you are holding space for our community in a way that's never been done before. Like, we don't need to perform. We don't need to become, you know, the CEO of a tech company to be validated. We just can be, and we are part of the American fabric. And that's what's so powerful, that a man named Zoran Mamdani can become, whose name is deliberately mispronounced, but can now become the mayor of New York City. It's a beautiful moment for immigrants.
And you know, I do want to move on from Zoran, but I will say one thing. What's really endearing about his win is that there are so many people who are owning him, right? Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Indians, Muslims, non-Muslims, Jewish folks. It's like there's so many different ethnicities, religious affiliations, people from all different backgrounds, young, old, Gen Z, of course, millennials. It's as if he has validated so many different, I wouldn't use the word marginalized. I have an issue with this word now. I think these words carry burden in some ways, sidelined communities, right? Democratic socialists, that's a political ideology that has been villainized in the US for a long time. All of us have come together from different walks of life, different age groups, demo, ethnicities, religions, to own someone. And it is a scary thought, again, going back to whether he succeeds or not, we should always see him as human and see his success as something that will have ebbs and flows. I do want to extend this conversation to you, Bilal, because we've already started talking about performance, self-worth, success. And I've noticed you have this recurring theme about performance and self-worth. You wrote an article about imposter syndrome and all. I do want to understand where you are and how does your immigrant experience unravel? Are you somebody who sees their success or achievement equate to belonging? How have you dealt with it over the years?
Absolutely. I'm a very sensitive and soft soul, so I'm going to tell you my story for how I became an immigrant. I moved to the US because I fell in love with a girl. So basically my now wife, me and her knew each other from LUMS. We went to school in Pakistan together. And then, you know, several years later, we eventually got married and I moved to the US for her. But I was very attached to Pakistan. I grew up on a dose of patriotism in the 90s, wanted to become like an Air Force pilot, you know, all those Pakistani boy dreams. And when I moved to the US, I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, my body was here physically, but my heart and my mind were in Pakistan, because Karachi was like amazing. That was my home. My friends were there. My family was there. So I had a lot of cognitive dissonance. And to the extent that I sank into clinical depression, I couldn't get out of bed for 30 days. Like, I know it sounds very dramatic, but my relationship with Pakistan was so strong that I was like, I used to listen to like Jazbai Janoon songs on repeat, like an old cat lady. And then eventually, like, I started building a life in America, but like I would travel to Pakistan for like 6 weeks, 8 weeks a year. And that was like real life. And America was like some kind of virtual reality. This is pre-COVID. Like, we all lived the virtual reality of COVID. It was like a COVID experience in the US. And then we had my daughter, Layal, and I took her to Karachi for the first time. I was really excited. I'm like, she's going to meet my nani. She's going to meet like my whole family. And for the first time, I saw Karachi through her eyes, or through the eyes of a woman, for lack of a better word, versus my male privilege and everything that Karachi was giving me. And I was like, oh, I'm not returning to Pakistan, you know, with my daughter. Like, I'm not raising her there. Like, I don't see her building a life there. I see her building a life here. So this is home. And this is like 4 years after I'd moved to the US. So until then, I hadn't even bought a home in the US, even though I could afford it, because I was like, this is not home. But that's when the debate started. And I'm like, okay, America is home, but what does it mean to be American? And what does it mean to be Pakistani American? And I was like, well, I've got to read books or read other people's experiences or listen to podcasts. And your podcast wasn't on yet. So I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anything that would talk about the Pakistani-American experience. I could find things on the Indian-American experience, the tech CEOs. I could find things on Italian-Americans, but I couldn't find anything about us. So I'm like, okay, I'm a journalist. Let me talk to Pakistani-Americans and put that up as a podcast. So I started a podcast called Pehchan, Extraordinary Pakistani-American Stories. And it really started as a way to understand my own identity and also be able to answer my daughter's questions about her identity. And we'll go into this later in the podcast, but one of my biggest realizations so far is that I can't answer my daughter's questions. I can barely answer them for myself. I don't have the answers, but to ask the right questions. And I'm still in that journey as an immigrant, where I feel like now I have a better idea of what it means to be Pakistani American. First, I thought like being a minority, being a Muslim immigrant, my job was to do, was to achieve, and to prove to the world that we are a valuable member of sort of American society, because I thought that I don't look American. I always used to think, like when I was traveling, I'm like, well, if I'm in Mexico and somebody asks me, where are you from? Am I supposed to say Pakistan or am I supposed to say America? What is my answer going to be? And I always used to say, I'm Pakistani, but I live in America, which is like, I don't know what that answer meant. And now I can say I'm Pakistani American. And even that little switch has like 6 years of like depression and starting a podcast to figure out your damn identity. I have to say, on a lighter note, there has got to be an easier way to figure out our immigrant identity than starting a podcast.
But podcasting is such an interesting way to do it, though, right? Sharing it with so many other people who are thinking the same. I do want to unpack some of the things that you said. First, I want to go back to what you said about being in Karachi and looking at things through your daughter's lens. Give me an example of what you saw that made you rethink going back to Pakistan to live there.
As a boy, for lack of a better word, public spaces were safer. I could go out and about my day. I could go out, eat. I could stay out late at night with my friends. And when I saw that through my daughter's lens, and I'm like, you know, I mean, she was only two at the time, but I was like, if she grows up and she wants to go out, like my heart will not be at rest until she comes back home. And then I remember like my parents feel the same way, even though I was 35 at the time, but they still like couldn't go to bed until I came back home. And I'm like, if that was my daughter, like I just could not see that and see her, you know, not that anything would happen, but I'm like, if something were to happen, I would never be able to forgive myself. And when I saw that, you know, I saw all the opportunities that she could get sort of in America, I was like, you know, this is a no-brainer. And it's actually my own identity crisis that would hold her back, and I can't do that to her. So a lot of times, especially for soft, sensitive souls like us, we live so much in our head and our heart that we just spend the whole life like debating, like our mind and heart is like a debate club in Oxford University. But then when something real happens, like when it's a choice, like where are you going to raise your daughter? And kids have a magical way of defining your immigrant identity. It's like, you know, they force questions that you never ask yourself. And then you sort of come to a conclusion. I started this journey trying to resolve my daughter's identity crisis, but she ended up solving mine.
So how did she solve it for you?
So she basically made the decision. I was one of those uncles who was like, I want to move back to Pakistan. I want to move back to Pakistan. Not as far as like the UK uncles who build like McMansions in deep Punjab, But I was like, you know, I want to save money to buy like a plot in Karachi. But then I was like, no, my life is here. And this is where my daughter is. And where my daughter is, my life is. And now I'm enjoying the immigrant experience through her lens. So I haven't been raised in schooling in America. But now I see her do schooling and I see what she learns. And it gives me so much like understanding and appreciation of American culture in a way that I never had the privilege of experiencing. And I'm like, okay, this is actually interesting. This is actually, you know, there's so much more to the American experience than we experience just as immigrants. I think we miss the first 20, 30 years of our life sort of here and what that gives us, but we get to experience that through our children and learn sort of along the way.
Absolutely. And also, Bilal, thank you for sharing that you were depressed when you came initially, right? A lot of immigrants go through it. This idea of everybody outside the US is just dying to come to the US. In some instances, sure. But in most instances, even for me, growing up in Pakistan, I saw America as this shiny building somewhere else, right? I did not think about it as often. It wasn't part of my consciousness beyond Hollywood movies and Western movies that I used to watch with my dad. And I don't know why he would watch so many Western movies, most of them very problematic. But the point being that this dichotomy of looking at America from the outside and then being part of the American experience and the experiment that it is, it's such an interesting juxtaposition of how we see our lives and how our life evolves. Something else that you said about you don't look American, so you were confused as to what you would say to somebody if you visited Mexico. Why do you think we have this picture of what an American looks like? Why do you think that happens to all of us?
I think it's because we don't see ourselves represented in mainstream American culture and society. And that's part of why I get excited when Zoran wins as well, because it's somebody who looks like me or at least looks like my kids. And the world doesn't see us.
Does it matter, though? Does it matter how the world sees us?
I think it did to me for longer than I would like care to accept. And now I'm at that stage where I'm like, I don't care how the world sees me. I see myself as an American, and that's sort of the win. I think the debate is inside us. And then as we choose to, you know, own our space, we sort of are able to break through that. It is really hard, especially when you're new. Like, there is an inferiority complex. I'm going to say, like, it's an imposter syndrome, but it starts as an inferiority complex. And I'll tell you, this is going to sound funny and lame, but the first time I came to America, I came to Columbia University to do my graduate journalism school. And I remember there was somebody who came to clean my room, my dorm room, and he happened to be a white guy. And for 2 minutes, my mind could not comprehend that a white guy was going to clean my room.
Well, that's a colonial hangover 101.
Yes. And this is like, you know, when I was much younger, and I was like, I can't. Later, I found out he was Hispanic. Not that it makes a difference, but that's how much colonialism is sort of embedded within us and in our culture. And I do feel like Italian Americans or European Americans would not have that kind of inferiority. So we start like here, right? Then we come here where we're equals and like, you know, it's okay for me to have a point of view. Like, I'm intelligent. I'm, you know, I want to be a contributing member to society. So now I'm here and now I'm looking ahead where I'm like, well, you know, I want to be the change that I want to see in the world. So if people don't see us as Americans, I want to start a podcast. I want to support people like Zoran. I want to support other members of the community so that we are going forward. Like, that's the vision of my podcast, which is I want to create 100 Zoran Mamdanis from the Pakistani American community. And by that, I don't just mean politics, but I mean Pakistani Americans in culture, in art, in business, in society, who embrace their pehchan, who don't run away from it. It's really interesting. People, Sadia, who are 5, 10, 15 years older than us, who moved here as Pakistani Americans or as other folks, they didn't hide their identity, but they didn't broadcast it either. They didn't tell the whole world, you know, it was, you know, people who knew, but like it wasn't. And now people like us, we're comfortable talking about a pehchan, like without, you know, worried about blowback. And our next generation, our kids, are just going to run away with it. That's not going to even be a conversation. Like, they don't have an identity crisis. They just are. And so it's beautiful to see how immigrant identity is like evolving in just a generation of us.
The interesting thing is, I am a middle child. So I feel like there was always this rebellious streak in me. If people did something, I would always push back and do the opposite. And I think owning my identity was probably an extension of who I am as a person. My stubbornness was probably leading the way, but it's such a cathartic thing to do, right? Once you own it, once you say, this is who I am, accept me the way I am, it's such a wonderful experience to have. But Bilal, you've talked about your nationalism, right? You've talked about your love for Pakistan. Do you ever feel guilty for leaving Pakistan, for choosing the U.S.?
I feel so guilty that I think I started the podcast just to get over my guilt. I think that's at the heart of it. It's like leaving your mother. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, it feels like a deep weight. But I do feel like the way that I make Pakistan proud or make it whole is by being a good citizen in America and a good representation of Pakistan and my identity and taking all of that forward into the next generation. And I think that the guilt is overwhelming. It's crushing. It's part of the identity crisis. I think it's why I was depressed. I think it's because there were two things. One was the guilt and the other was this expectation that I should be happy in America, that I've arrived. And that was the intellectual pinning, but that was not where my heart was. And that disconnect is what most immigrants fall in when they first come here, that cognitive dissonance.
Well, you've mentioned your podcast a few times. It's called Pehchan, which means identity, knowing yourself, right? That's how you define it. It's an interesting name. It's not easy to pronounce. So kudos to you for choosing a name, which some people may not be able to pronounce. I love that. It's pretty much focused on Pakistani diaspora, unlike Immigrantly, where we are really focused on or celebrating the immigrant identity in all its shapes and forms. You've really chosen to narrow it down to Pakistani diaspora. And what's interesting to me is the tagline is Extraordinary Pakistani American Stories. Why the word extraordinary? Why can't we be ordinary and yet worth celebrating?
I think that's a really good question. And the honest answer is because Pehchan is so hard to pronounce, I wanted to have a little bit of oomph for basically everybody else to be able to follow. And so the extraordinary came as part of that. I do agree with you. And I think, I don't want to say a lot of my guests are ordinary, but they have everyday stories about immigrant experiences that make it sort of powerful and impactful in terms of how we bring it to life. On your point about the niche, like being narrow versus being broad, I wanted to make this podcast first and foremost for myself and the identity experience that I was going through in that journey. I do think it'll evolve over years. I do admire a lot of the work that you do. You know, well, Pakistan, there are rickshaws which have a sticker on the back, Main bade hoke Prado banungi. I'm going to grow up to become a Jeep. My podcast is like that. I'm going to grow up to become an immigrantly. But the point is, like, this is where I am in my immigrant journey right now. And I feel like as I evolve and as I go through this journey, I think this experience will need to evolve. And I think maybe the next stage will actually be from Pakistani American to Muslim American. And then it'll be an immigrant. And then it'll just be an American. It'll just be extraordinary American stories. But that's the journey we're on.
There's nothing wrong with niche, right? There's nothing wrong with narrow focus. You are a journalist as well, right? You are a podcaster now, but you've been a very successful journalist in Pakistan. You've written for huge publications back home. How does your journalistic background square with podcasting?
So this is such a brilliant question. And I think it both helps and hurts when it comes to journalism and how it impacts the podcast. So one, I have a natural knack for storytelling, like that gets developed in journalism. I remember even when I was a little kid in Karachi and used to go in the school bus, I used to get like all the gossip from basically everybody. And then my daddy's like, you're going to work in like news one day. And it was just like, I love like telling stories and be like, this happened to this person and this happened to this person. And, you know, my journalism like took off in Pakistan. I was writing for Express Tribune for over 10 years. I've interviewed, I was Finance Minister Asad Umar's final interview before he resigned. I've interviewed Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi, the President of Pakistan, Arif Alvi. That gave me a lot of satisfaction in terms of the impact that I was able to make. But it was also a news around me when I started my podcast. So when I was starting my podcast, I was a very established journalist. My videos would get millions of views. Then I started this podcast and I started this for myself and I started getting hundreds of views. And I was crushed. I felt like that was a rejection of me as a person. I'm creating for me. And then I had to take a long time to be like, look, I'm doing this for myself. Like I'm doing this because these are stories that I'm trying to learn from. I had to anchor myself. I had to get myself back up from there. And now my, you know, podcasts are getting traction. They're getting thousands of views a month. And now we're back in the swing of things. So that's sort of a positive and a negative sort of experience. But a lot of the journalistic tools help me in the podcast. But the funny part, like on where it hurts, is like then you become a podcast host in your real life. And that's really annoying to everybody else in your real life. Because then when I'm like talking to my wife, sometimes my podcast voice comes on, like where she's telling me a problem. And I'm like, well, how about like what's really going on? And she's like, dude, cut the podcast act out. Just be like human. And so that's how we go in and out of our identities when we do that.
You know, what you said makes so much sense. There is such a thing as a podcast voice. I have a podcast voice. When I talk to my kids, when I talk to my husband, this is not the voice that comes out. But somehow, the minute the mic turns on, my voice changes, right? And there's always this thing in the back of my mind. I want people to not just enjoy the conversations that we are having, like you and I are having this conversation. I do want people who don't know a lot about Pakistan or Pakistani culture to enjoy this human conversation. But at the same time, it's like the voice, right? You want people to like the voice. Because I kid you not, Bilal, and I don't know if this has happened to you, I've met a few people who I could tell they don't have a podcast voice, but they should not be doing podcasting. And sorry if I'm being an ass, but there is a podcast voice, and that's so important.
Why are businesses like HelloVet choosing Apple products and services?
One of the great things about Apple products is that it's really easy for us to handle the security, the updates, the pre-installed applications. We've been able to do that without a dedicated IT support team.
Find out how Apple products and services can help you run your business at apple.co/HelloVet.
Let's talk about the podcast again, Pehchan. What stories do you feel are still undertold in Pakistani diaspora?
I think we don't have a realization of our power and our impact. Even though I do a podcast specifically on the Pakistani American niche, every day I learn a story about a Pakistani American absolutely crushing it. And my mind is blown. And I'm like, why do I not know this story? Why does everybody not know this story? So, and I'll give you like a few examples. Nuran Khan is a Pakistani American who runs and sort of sits on the president of the board for Girl Scouts of America. So the largest girls organization in America is led by a Pakistani American woman. Like that is culture barrier breaking on so many different levels. Like we just don't even know that story in terms of the potential of what it can create. Kashif Sheikh, who is the head of the Pillars Fund, like revolutionizing philanthropy for the Muslim community, you know, beyond zakat. Like it's an incredible story, an incredible journey. Pakistani Americans, like in politics, are making a difference. Bernie Sanders, campaign manager, Pakistani American. There's just so much that Pakistani Americans have done, and they've flown one layer under the radar.
Why?
It has to do with our immigrant experience, the same experience as, you know, the white boy coming to clean my room. And I'm like, no, let me do it for you. There's just something where we're so close to breaking through and being comfortable. But the last mile, we stop ourselves.
Exactly.
And that's what really this podcast is about, is to push us through the last mile and to be like, you know what? We can do this. We deserve this. We own this. I think, though, one of the reasons is what you point between extraordinary and ordinary. We're not comfortable with just being. And therefore, when we do, we don't feel comfortable being when we're doing. We only see our value when we're doing.
We only see our value in our achievements. It's not even the struggle or the act itself. It's the outcome that people are so fixated on. And that's probably the immigrant experience in the US, right? The idea of being an immigrant is always conflated with hustle, struggle, and finally you achieve something. So you can't exist in this space where you're being yourself and you're enjoying life and you're living it as a human, right? Have you ever struggled with the word immigrant itself? Have you ever struggled to own it, given how tabooed and loaded it has become over the years in the US? Have you had those moments of introspection or reticence of, I don't want to be called an immigrant anymore. I have a passport now.
I think given the fact that I got a passport this year, I'm ready to graduate from the word immigrant. But it's also interesting that sometimes people even close to you. So I have this white friend of mine, really good friend of mine. You know, we were talking about a journey and he was struggling to find a job, like he wanted to make a transition. And he's like, yeah, I don't have like a crazy story like yours. Like I came from Pakistan and then, you know, I made it here and you know, it's harder for me. And I'm like, you know, I empathize and I appreciate his point. And I'm like, buddy, you have no idea what my story and what my journey and how hard it was to get to where I am. And so I think that I'm ready to graduate from my immigrant moniker, but I don't think that everybody around us is.
Why? Why though?
I want to be Pakistani American. Like I want to, and that doesn't mean that I don't, I'm not rooted in my immigrant mentality, but I don't want to feel a constant need to prove myself. Immigrant for me is another word of somebody who has to prove themselves.
Oh my gosh, this is such a wonderful conversation. That's what we are trying to reclaim with Immigrantly and all its different iterations, right? Immigrantness or immigrant is just an immigration status. Like you were not born in the US. So whether you're a naturalized citizen, whether you came here when you were seven, probably when you were seven, you're probably 1.5 generation, but you're just first generation immigrant. And that's exactly what I push back on. It's almost as if we have to reclaim it with pride. I have been a citizen for almost 13 years now. And I am so proud of the fact that I am an immigrant because immigrants are the OG risk takers. We have had to have nuance. We've learned to evolve, to compromise, to adapt, to learn, to navigate in a culture that was not ours, right? Sure, from Pakistan, a lot of us know the language, but that doesn't mean that we don't have the struggles of people who don't know the language. The thing with immigrant or immigrantness is that it's been so villainized in American psyche. And America has this love-hate relationship with the word itself, right? Where people who are immigrants and will always remain immigrants because of the fact that they were not born in the US are hesitant to call themselves immigrants. I kid you not, I have friends who've lived in this country for over 20 years, naturalized citizens, and I've had these conversations with them. And they would say something like, oh, I'm not an immigrant anymore. I'm a naturalized citizen. And I'm like, dude, you are still an immigrant. You may be a citizen and you can call yourself Pakistani American. I love that hyphenated tag. But there's nothing wrong with immigrants. Like, immigrants are so cool. Like, imagine leaving your country, leaving, you know, your culture, your familiar surroundings to experience a whole new world. How many people can claim to do that?
I love that. And this makes me think of something when I was a kid, again, going back to how sensitive soul I was, I used to think about my purpose in life a lot. And I had many different iterations of that. And that's a story for another podcast. But one of the things that I landed on is I want to live as many different lives as I can in one life. Like, I want to experience as many different things as I can. And I think being an immigrant has the power of you living so many different lives and for you to be able to time travel. So now when I travel to Pakistan, I time travel to a different period of my life.
I love that.
And it's like I'm young again. I've lived in different cities. And so I'm like, okay, I'm this version of myself in this city. So the immigrant experience, and sometimes I think about this really deeply. I was thinking about this last night. I'm like, you know, the mohalla, the neighborhood that I grew up in Karachi, 99% of my friends, of our neighbors, have not moved from that place. So now they just, the kids have kids, right? And so when I go there, it's like going to like a museum where time has stopped and where I can go and I can see, but my time is, and it's not completely true. I'm sure their lives have moved like in a lot of different ways as well. But for me as an immigrant, it's like walking into a museum, like a different time, like being able to time travel. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about being an immigrant.
But because I invited you into this small act of pausing, right? I started my intro with, I want to pause. It's an act of defiance for me to pause, to breathe easy, to enjoy where I am. When do you give yourself the permission to not hustle, to just take a pause, to breathe easy? What does that look like for you personally?
I had asked my therapist, I'm like, I'm struggling to do this. So your question, like, I was struggling to do this. And my therapist is like, start meditating and listening to videos of guided meditation. And I'm so brown and I'm like, but I pray. But I took his advice and I kid you not, Sadia, it has changed my life. I now actually meditate. And I listened to a guided conversation. And the funny part about me, because I'm still like a type A immigrant, I have a checklist of like how many times I need to meditate. So I still need to check that meditation. But I do meditate and I don't know what it does. I don't know how it works, but it works. Like, it slows me down. And last week I missed my meditation and this week I was anxious. And I was like, my God, like, this actually works. So I actually deliberately try to intentionally slow myself down with meditation. And I talk about sort of anxiety, letting go. So much of that sort of helps me calm down and cool down. The other thing that I do is called gratitude exercises. So every morning I try to wake up and I talk about three things that I'm grateful for. And that has also given me the concept of like being, and I don't say, oh, I accomplished this or I accomplished that. I'm like, you know, I'm grateful for having hands. I'm grateful for being able to eat. I'm grateful for the little things in life to reinforce how I'm just being versus like doing and going all the time. And even when you were asking this question, it reminded me of the meditation because you have such a soft voice and a calming presence.
You know, I can't meditate, Bilal. I am so jittery. The only thing I can do is pray because that keeps my focus for 5 minutes and then I move on. Okay, let's do this interesting experiment. I haven't done this with other guests, but if you could say anything in this moment without articulating it fully or thinking about it, imagine you don't have a mic in front of you right now. Is there anything that you're thinking that you would instantly share with us here?
This is a hard question, and I'm trying not to use my podcast voice. I think the biggest thing that I've learned from you and on this podcast, and it's part of the journey that I'm also going through, is I don't need to be enough. You know, there's this idea that I'm enough, but I think the idea better than that is I don't need to be enough. I am who I am, and that's okay. And I think so much of that is about, you know, being an immigrant, being an identity, but it's also about being human. Like, exactly. I think I've had a tough week. It's been hard. It's been a hard week for me on multiple levels. And I just want myself to know, you know, that it's okay not to be enough sometimes. It's okay.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear that, because this week was hard. And I broke down a couple of times. And as you said, I have to believe in the power of being me and being messy. And I can't change how people see me, what they think of me, what they think of us. But sometimes it's, as you said, we don't have to be enough. And in the end, if you were to define the United States of America, how would you do that?
Home.
Wow. Short and sweet.
I don't think I've ever said that before. Now it's home. It's where the heart is.
Oh, wow. Bilal, where can people find Pehchan?
So you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you consume your podcasts. It's called Pehchan, Extraordinary Pakistani American Stories. And we hope you, you know, follow us, comment. You know, it's a small community. And, you know, Sadia and I just want to say, on behalf of podcasters, we're like kindergarten children. Like, we come home every day and be like, look, mom, like, I got a star from my teacher. You know, your comment, you're like, means the world to us. It keeps us going. This is a very lonely sport. And so we appreciate you. I appreciate you even creating this space for us and being a trailblazer. You know, main bade hoke Prado banungi. You know, you inspire us.
Oh, you're too kind. Where can people find you? Because again, beyond podcasting, you are a phenomenal journalist.
I would say that the best place in terms of where to follow my work and follow me is on Instagram. So Instagram/MBilalAkhani is like the best place to follow. That's where I post a lot of my journalism and my non-podcast stuff as well. So that's the best place to be in touch, to see my journalism and my other work as well.
Thank you, Bilal. This was so good. Thank you.
Thank you, Sadia.
This was fun. And sometimes it's really good to sit down with a fellow podcaster, a fellow Pakistani American, and dish it out, because a lot of things that I'm sometimes thinking or I may have experienced, I can totally relate to what they are thinking in that moment. And that's the beauty of talking to so many incredible folks on this podcast. And by the way, as I said during the interview, Bilal is a phenomenal journalist. If you haven't checked out his work, do. The podcast Pehchan is a great storytelling platform for Pakistani diaspora and beyond. Storytelling is a universal connector. Doesn't matter whose stories, we are all humans at the end of the day. We have more similarities than differences. This podcast was written and produced by me, Sadia Khan. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our editor and sound designer is Lou Raskin. Our theme music is by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Vitamix Sound. Come back next week when I have another guest. Take care and have a great rest of the day.